This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Welcome to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. Tony is not with us today. I'm Peter Sprigg, a senior fellow for policy studies here at Family Research Council in Washington, along with one of my colleagues.
Travis Weber, director of the Center for Religious Liberty, and we're glad to welcome you to Washington Watch today.
We have a busy show. The reason Travis and I are co-hosting today is because most of the show is going to be devoted to talking about a trip that we took a few weeks ago to Hungary, to the Hungarian capital of Budapest for a family conference there, the Budapest Family Summit. We have some special guests that we're talking with who were involved in that program. And first, though, we're going to start with some breaking news having to do with a vote that took place just late yesterday in the House of Representatives. Representative Vicky Hartzler of Missouri introduced an amendment to try to block the use of taxpayer dollars to pay for gender reassignment surgery in the military. Unfortunately, that amendment was defeated. And here with us today to talk about it is our own General Jerry Boykin, Executive Vice President of the Family Research Council and a former commander of the U.S. Army's Elite Delta Force, along with, I want to mention, Travis, who is also a Navy veteran and a graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy. So we want to talk about this situation with the military. General Boykin, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks, Peter. I'm glad to be with you, too.
So give our listeners just a little bit of an overview of what, first of all, what the Obama administration did with respect to transgenders in the military and what Representative Hartzler tried to do yesterday.
Yeah, thanks, Peter. During the Obama administration, President Obama issued a directive to the Defense Department to allow those people inside the military who were transgender or who identified themselves as transgender to come out of the closet and openly serve as transgender service members. And he set the stage for ultimately recruiting people that considered themselves transgender. Now, along with that came, other provisions for providing them with the hormone therapy as well as the, as you said earlier, sexual reassignment or gender reassignment surgery. And that was supposed to take place on the 1st of July. And fortunately, the Secretary of Defense put a halt to it. But think about this. This is a decision that was made by the White House that had absolutely nothing to do with military readiness. In no way does this kind of thing contribute to military readiness. And in fact, it degrades military readiness. And Congress was not even involved in this. Congress was not a part of this. There was no congressional action associated with this. It was done strictly by a directive out of the White House. And that's what that vote last night was trying to stop, any expenditure of taxpayers' dollars at a time when the military needs every dollar it can get, not to allow the military to spend that money to provide a gender reassignment surgery or hormone therapy for people that come in the military and identify as transgender.
General, you mentioned readiness. As you know, one of the things that we've focused on here is readiness consistently on this issue, in addition to the other things that make the military unique. You know far better than I, but even from my time in the Navy, I and everyone else who has served understands that when you enter the military, you're putting aside your individuality, yourself, to a large degree, and focusing on the mission, focusing on what needs to get done in terms of protecting America and keeping America safe. Doesn't mean we give up all the rights, but we focus on the mission. And this is why I think you, I, and others who have served and people who really look at this can understand this as something where we need to prevent these things that pull apart the mission of the military to pull apart that unity and disrupt readiness so significantly?
No, absolutely. And just stop and think about this. How about the people that have been denied military service as a result of bad eyes? Have we ever had a policy of where we would bring them in and give them the eye surgery that they needed or a variety of things like that? You're absolutely right, Travis. It is not about you. It is about the greater good. It is about a transcendent cause of serving for a cause, a reason that is larger than yourself. If you are part of an organization that relies on the idea of brotherhood for survival, but certainly for success as well. And it's not about the individual. And when we get so far off track that we think that we are in a situation where we ought to be recruiting people that we know are transgender, that are coming in the military, that are going to be out, for at least a year, that they're going to be away from their assigned duties because they're going through this transition from being either a male to a female or vice versa. That does not contribute to military readiness. It's does nothing to help us win wars. And that's the only mission the military has, is to win the nation's wars.
Well, General, we're going to move to another guest in a moment, but I want to mention with this vote yesterday, there were, I believe it's 24 Republican members of the House who voted against Representative Hartzler's amendment or at least did not vote for it. Some of those are within our listening area, and particularly for these representatives, we want to encourage our listeners to contact these Republican representatives and say, why did you vote in favor of spending taxpayer dollars on gender reassignment surgery for military service members? I just want to get their names in there. Representative Justin Amash from Michigan, Representative Schuster of Pennsylvania, Representative Elise Stefanik of New York, and Representative Tom Reed of New York. If you live in the congressional district of any of those four in particular, there's more, but those four in particular, we have a lot of listeners who live in their districts. If you could contact their district office and let them know you're not happy with this vote, that would be one useful thing that you can do. Well, we need to move on to another guest, but thank you, General Boykin, for joining us.
I'm glad to be with you guys.
Thanks,
General.
Now we're going to move on to talking, as I mentioned, about the World Congress of Families, which was held in Budapest, Hungary, just back in late May of this year. And our first guest is actually the managing director of the World Congress of Families and of the International Organization for the Family, which is kind of the parent organization of this international event. We'd like to welcome Larry Jacobs. Larry, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Peter. Really, really honored to be with you.
Great. Can you just give our listeners a quick overview of what the World Congress of Families is and how long you've been holding these gatherings?
Sure. The World Congress of Families now for 20 years has been organizing these international events to unite the pro-family movement. We have people from more than 80 countries that have attended what some people have called like the Olympics, if you will, the Olympics of the international pro-family, pro-life movement. That hasn't always been by our fans that have called us that. But the idea is to bring together groups like Family Research Council in the United States and groups from all over the world, from Africa, Asia, Europe. Of course, in this case, we were having a lot of groups from Eastern Europe and Central Europe because of location in Budapest. But for one thing, to unite us and say, look, we may come from different nationalities and countries and geographies and even religious backgrounds, but on the family, on the family as the fundamental unit of society, we agree, and it's so important that we want to share the best ideas, you know, what is it that, that Family Research Council is doing really well? What is it that, you know, that the African Family Institute is doing? What is it that the, you know, the Hungarians are doing well, and especially regards to protecting life and family at the national level? And in Hungary, we see what they're calling a family-friendly country. This is really what the World Congress is about.
Yeah, and this has been held every 2 or 3 years, different locations. I know it's been my privilege to attend the meeting in Mexico City, Warsaw, Amsterdam, Madrid, Sydney, and now Budapest. Why did you end up choosing Budapest and Hungary for this particular meeting this year?
Well, that's a great question, Peter. And, you know, every year, it was originally supposed to be every 2 years, but we see with the crises facing the family now, we've almost gone to an annual basis. But in the case of Hungary, when we actually have an international planning committee, we received a proposal from Hungary, and I was invited by a guest that you'll hear later, Secretary of State Katalin Novak for the Hungarian government. She invited me to Budapest. She had been actually honored at our last year's event in Tbilisi, Georgia. And she said, look, our country wants to be known as the family-friendly country. We're launching a national motto and slogan. They had held a demographic forum 2 years ago where Viktor Orban spoke, their prime minister, and some other speakers on demography issues, including Pat Sagan, who I know you're quite familiar with, Peter, I've worked with for many years. And so, it was a natural choice over some other parts of the world that had contacted us, because it's probably between Hungary and Poland, they are the guiding lights in Europe as far as the family. And in some ways, they're holding back the all of the anti-family forces, whether it's the gender issues you're just talking about, or same-sex marriage, or abortion. These are two countries in Europe, and Hungary being one of the most vocal and having the most vocal leader in Viktor Orban on this issue, on these family issues, that it just seemed, you know, we couldn't turn down a chance like this to stand up for family in the heart of Europe.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting. I enjoyed learning more about the history of Hungary, but some of these countries like Hungary and Poland that previously were part of the Soviet bloc, the East Bloc, they've come out from under the dictatorship of communism, and now they find themselves struggling under the effort of the far left in Western Europe to sort of impose secular values, anti-family values upon them, and they're actually setting an example for the rest of us.
That's right. It's a totalitarianism of a different sort. Not the communist, not the Soviet Union, but it is in some ways obviously a socialist totalitarian European Union that's telling them what to do about family, and they're resisting.
Well, thank you. Thanks, Larry, for joining us. I wish we had more time, but we're looking forward to talking to Michael Patkai from the Faith Church in Budapest and Katalin Novak from the Hungarian government later in the show. Thanks for joining us, Larry.
Thank you, Peter. And those are two great, two great friends we have in Hungary. And I appreciate all that you're doing, and blessings to you and your audience.
Okay, thank you. We'll be right back.
Imagine being threatened by the government for reading a magazine article. This is exactly what Don Vanderboon, owner of the West Michigan Beef Company, experienced when USDA inspectors threatened to shut down his operation because of reading material that they found in his company break room, which defended biblical marriage. Mr. Vanderboon's employees were well aware of the material and of the company's publicly stated Christian principles and had no objections. As we all know, religious liberty is an indelible thread woven into the fabric of America. Without it, the American experiment will fail. Yet time and time again, the freedom of Americans to believe and live out those beliefs has been attacked by government action. Now more than ever, our first freedom of religious liberty needs protection. Watch a special program hosted by FRC President Tony Perkins, where you'll hear from real people whose freedom to believe has been affected in real ways, including Mr. Vanderboon himself. Go to frc.org/believe to watch this special presentation.
So what would you do with an extra $500 a month in your budget? $500. This isn't hypothetical, by the way. This is something you may need to think about very soon if you decide to become a member of MediShare. MediShare is a way to pay for your health care, and typically it costs $500 less per month for a family versus other health care plans. So seriously, think about this. You could pay off loans, pay down a mortgage, save the money for retirement, donate to charity. That would be a big deal. But you know what? Here's the best thing. MediShare works. It has 250,000 members, and it's growing fast. With MediShare, not only do you save, you don't have to pay for things you don't believe in either, and that is a beautiful thing too. So here's how you can find out more, and you might actually wind up saving even more than $500 a month. So check into it. Here's the number. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23, now available in Montana. 855-PSALM-23.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms, in association with American Family Studios, introduces Ryan DeFrades' Secret Agent.
I'm Ryan DeFrades. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrades' Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetie!
She's an agent! Get her, boys!
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrades' Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Order yours today at ryansecretagent.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. This is Travis Weber along with Peter Sprigg. And we're your hosts today for this special segment involving FRC's trip to Hungary, involving the recent World Congress of Families. With us today in the studio is Michael Patkai, the son-in-law to Pastor Sándor Németh, who's the pastor of Faith Church in Hungary, where Peter and I got the opportunity to speak, and we were over there recently. So Michael's with us in the studio today. We're happy to have him here, and we're excited that you're here with us today. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, Travis.
Absolutely. So, Michael, why don't you start us off here? A lot of people here in the United States may not be familiar with Faith Church, its story, and role in Hungary. Why don't you give us a little bit in terms of how Faith Church came about and the conversion story of the head pastor, Pastor Sándor Németh?
Okay, well, it all started in 1976 when Pastor Sándor Németh decided to emigrate from Hungary. And he wanted to head to the United States, but he was caught by the border guards and put into prison in the neighboring country. So the prison warden called him into his office after one night and said, "Young man, you don't belong here." And then they gave him a lawyer who took him out back to Hungary. And the first thing he did was buy a Bible. So that's where it all began.
And really, you know, what we have difficulty at times relating to here in the United States is a church growing up under communism. So can you talk a little bit about just how he had to deal with the communist authorities? Because this is really, we're looking at the 1980s here, and just what's happened with the church since then.
It was persecution. So there were continuous eavesdropping happening from the neighboring room where they held the services. This was an underground church, and there was continual threats from the communist regime because you were not supposed to gather, you were not supposed to promote Christian values and beliefs, and whatever was not in line with evolution and atheism was considered very dangerous to the state.
Yeah, I mean, this sounds, you know, this is something where, you know, it's important for our listeners here in the United States to hear about. It's an inspiring story to hear how God grew the church nevertheless. To today, to tell me is, you know, in terms of the number of congregants and locations, where are you all at today?
Well, I came to the church first in 1990, and at that time there were about 1,000 people already in the church. We rented a facility for a long time. We were not able to buy our building because the authorities would not let us purchase our own premises. So the church continued to grow in the 90s and after 2000, and now we have 60,000 members. Our main building hosts 10,000 people on every given weekend.
Yeah, I mean, it's
And I found it fascinating when we were there that the main building is a renovated brick factory. Isn't that what it used to be?
That's right. That's right.
But they have a very large campus there in kind of an industrial area of Budapest. They only place you could get enough land to sort of do all the things you wanted to do with it, right?
Yes. Now this premises holds the main hall. We also have St. Paul Academy, our theological state-accredited university. And we have the newspaper, the radio station, and children's areas as well.
And Peter, when you and I were there, we got the opportunity to speak to students at St. Paul Academy. You know, Michael very graciously allowed us that opportunity to explain FRC's work to them and to talk about how to stand as a Christian in the public square, because although Hungary and the United States have differences in terms of law and policy, the approach for a Christian and how to do that from their own faith walk is something that we share. And so, Peter, you know, I know you and I were very excited to be able to speak to those students.
Well, I was communicating with you. You were communicating with Michael, and the first indication was that they wanted us to speak to a youth group. I was picturing a group of maybe 25 people, you know, or something. And we walk in the hall, and there's at least 400 in the hall. So it was quite an impressive audience, and not only were they attentive to us to listen to what we had to say in English with translation, but we were there about 3 hours, I think. I mean, it was pretty remarkable.
Because you did a good job, I think.
Well, you know, I'm just thankful this opportunity came about, because you had visited Washington several years ago, and that was how we were able to, we had your contact information, we were able to establish touch base with you and get in touch with you when we were going to come over to Hungary. You know, and this gave us an opportunity to share our work with the Hungarian believers. I think it was very encouraging to both parties. And you were here in Washington several years ago for what?
Well, we came to Washington to a large gathering, which was a pro-Israeli rally. And my father-in-law was asked to speak at the Congress in one of the halls there. So after that, we came over to Family Research Council because we knew that you are an important organization promoting the values of family. And with your materials, we were able to write articles and make some interviews about homosexuality, pornography, family issues, and religious liberty issues as well.
Well, and we appreciate you visiting. Obviously, we're glad that our material was of assistance to you all. And, you know, Peter and I know we were encouraged to see the students that we were talking to over in Hungary very engaged on these issues, happy to hear how a Christian should engage on these issues of sexuality, religious liberty, and the like. And that's, you know, what we were able to talk to them about. So, you know, I think this was something that was beneficial to both sides.
Absolutely.
Not only with the students, but the next day when we got to speak to the church too.
And I wanted to mention this is a little bit of returning the favor, because we also did a radio interview in your radio studios that you have there at Faith Church. So we're happy to be able to welcome you to the FRC radio studios here in Washington in return. Unfortunately, we're not giving you as much time as you gave us, but that's all right.
Let me mention that for us, the support that we received from the United States in communist times was very important. From the Christians in the United States. And in this manner, I'd also like to express my gratitude and Pastor Sándor's gratitude to all the Christians who prayed and supported us at that time.
All right. Well, we're here in the studio at Washington Watch with Michael Patkai, and we will be back after the break with more of an interview with Michael from Hungary.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, this is the beginning of earnings season, and I think the markets are going to be watching this very, very closely. Janet Yellen aside, political garbage going on in Washington aside, the markets are going to be focused on some of these earnings. And right now, most of the analysts are predicting that there's going to be more misses than there are gains in the earnings. If that is the case, it's going to be the first time in a while we've seen that, because we have seen the markets benefit a great deal from good earnings reports. And we'll see if that ends or not. We did start off, kick off with financials. Some of the bank stocks, large banks, the big five, are all reporting. JP Morgan and Citibank came in better than expected, but didn't do their stock any good because all of the other information in their earnings reports points to some trouble here for the rest of the year. They're still blaming, of course, as all the financials will, the 2008 financial crisis that they still haven't recovered. Covered because they have spent 6 years kicking the can down the road, and then they decided to get back to reality. So, of course, it is accurate to continue to blame the financial crisis for their woes and problems. Tech stocks may be continuing to hold up, as we're seeing some of the smaller security tech companies doing very well this week. But nonetheless, oil, financials, and the Asia markets are going to continue to drive our markets. The oil markets are looking pretty good, primarily due to the confidence of manufacturing picking up, increasing demand for crude oil coming out of China. So we'll be watching all of this closely.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. My name is Peter Sprigg, and together with my colleague Travis Weber, we're filling in today for Tony and devoting today's show to our recent trip to Hungary, to Budapest in Hungary, where we attended the World Congress of Families and also got the exciting opportunity to speak at a couple of events at a large church there called Faith Church in Budapest. And we welcome here Michael, who was one of our hosts there, the son-in-law of Pastor Sándor Németh, who is the pastor there. And so we mentioned in the previous segment that we got to speak to the St. Paul Academy, sort of college and theological school that is run by Faith Church. And then on Saturday evening, Travis and I, along with a couple of other speakers from the World Congress of Families, got to speak to the worship service at Faith Church. And Travis, do you want to talk about what that was like?
Yeah, I mean, this was just a fantastic opportunity, and we're very thankful to Michael for enabling us to have this opportunity. I know it was exciting for me to share my work on religious liberty and how a Christian approaches that with Christians in Hungary. I mean, there were thousands in that audience. And Michael, tell us, I mean, how many people did that really reach in terms of what you guys do?
Well, first of all, in the hall, there were probably between 8,000 to 10,000 people that we could reach. And then this went out on the radio. And we also have a television channel, which is not a solely Christian channel. It's more like a secular news channel, actually the number one news channel of Hungary, called ATV. But we have the 700 Club running on there, and we have Christian services running on there as well.
I was going to mention, it was interesting to see how you broadcast a lot of programming from the United States, the 700 Club. I think you mentioned, goes back to the 80s, really, under communism, when Christians in the United States showed a lot of support for your church and really publicly supported you all.
That's correct. So back in the beginning of the 80s, we had, for example, Ms. Pat Robertson come over and support Pastor Sándor. And we had Christians who came in who brought Bibles in, which was illegal to do. So there was a lot of brave missionaries at the time coming in under the Iron Curtain.
And just a reminder to the audience that the big political changes in Eastern Europe, which when these countries were under Soviet domination, but that changed, began to change around 1989. The Soviet Union collapsed in 1991. So here you had a situation where you were a small minority fighting this giant dictatorship, and yet the dictatorship has fallen, the church remains standing. And maybe that's a metaphor for history, actually.
that's exactly what happened. It was David against Goliath. But I remember our elders telling us that Pastor Sándor already during these tough times was preaching that we must be free to speak our faith. We should not be afraid of the regime, because it's only God's kingdom that will remain standing forever.
And one thing that was interesting about Faith Church is that you do have close ties to Israel and are have been strong supporters of the nation of Israel and the Jewish people and their right to a homeland there. Tell us a little bit more about that and your ties with Israel.
Well, it's an exciting relationship, and to be honest with you, one of the reasons we were able to build this huge facility was our relationship to Israel. And the way that that happened is that the banks did not want to give loans to just a congregation in Hungary. But when our contact at the bank told the bank manager that we just recently brought over 3,000 Hungarian believers on airplanes to Israel, that showed our commitment and our financial capability as well to pay back a loan. So they assisted us then.
You know, it's really exciting and interesting to see. I think I know I speak for myself and probably others when I say that, you know, we as Christians in the United States, we often are aware of what's happening here. But in places like Hungary, around the world, bodies of Christian believers are coming together and doing things for the kingdom of God that we just don't know about. So this is really encouraging and exciting.
I wanted to mention, I wanted to make sure I get this in before we finish, that the church actually has a website as well. If people are interested in getting more information, learning more about the history of the church, the easiest way might be just to Google Faith Church Hungary. There is an English language part of the website, so it'll be very accessible. In fact, I want to mention that if anybody goes to Budapest, I encourage them to go and attend the service, because there's also translation services available during the worship.
That's right.
And so there's that. And I also wanted to mention, I don't know if we had even told you this, but Travis and I have both written for the FRC blog about our experiences in Hungary, and actually kind of wrote up the talks that we gave at the worship service and posted that on the blog. So we've been excited about sharing with people, and we encourage people to go to the FRC blog if they're interested in learning more about our time there.
So, you know, it's exciting to see where Faith Church is today. Where is it operating in Hungary and in the surrounding countries at this moment?
Yes, we have approximately 150 smaller groups, congregations. So the main is in Budapest, but we also have church groups in Germany, Austria, Slovakia, Slovenia, Transylvania, Romania. We have Christians from the Ukraine as well, and many international conferences, which are attended by Christians from all over Europe.
Well, this is very exciting to see. We're encouraged by Faith Church in Hungary and the surrounding countries of Europe. Our guest, Michael Patkai, here at Washington Watch. We'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. We're going to Israel in March, and we'd love for you to come along with us. You know, one of the frequent questions I get when I talk about our trip to the Holy Land, people say to me, Tim, is it safe to go on your trip? To which I respond, you know, we won't be in New York but a few hours. So we're going to Israel. Israel is a safer than any other place in the world. They take their security very, very seriously. So if you'd like to join us as we see Jerusalem and Bethlehem and the Dead Sea and the Sea of Galilee and the Jordan River and all the other places you've read about since you were a child in the Bible, we'd love to have you join us. For more information, go to the website twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com. Or for our brochure, call 800-FAMILIES That's 800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, option 5.
The American Family Association.
Some trust in chariots.
Trust in chariots.
For 40 years now, we've labored alongside you to restore America's moral foundations.
Some trust in horses.
Horse in horses.
Year after year, God has proven himself to be most trustworthy. As we look to the future, we declare with the psalmist David,
we trust in the name of the Lord our God.
You can be among the first to receive updates about changes and special events coming up in our programming and always keep up with the things you might have missed with American Family Radio's weekly newsletter. Every Friday, you'll receive an email with a recap of the week's highlights from your favorite broadcasts, as well as important information about special programs in the near future. Go to AFR.net to sign up today and never miss another update. Add yourself to our mailing list and stay in the loop at AFR.net.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
You know, there's probably never been a more important time in our economy to be thinking about a charitable gift annuity. I hope you'll do that just to shore up, to firm up some more income, permanent income, income that you can count on for the rest of your life while you're doing the Lord's work. A charitable gift annuity has been something I've been talking about for 25 years. Finally, we're seeing even mainstream start to get on board with the merits of charitable gift annuities. I hope you'll consider it. You can call the AFA Foundation. Someone there will help you work through the details and find out whether you qualify for a charitable gift annuity.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Welcome back to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. My name is Peter Sprigg, here with my colleague
Travis Weber,
filling in today for Tony. And we are devoting the entire program today to talking about our experiences recently in Budapest, Hungary, where we traveled for the World Congress of Families and were able to connect with a large church there, Faith Church. So we're delighted now to welcome a special guest talking to us directly from Budapest, Hungary, a representative of the Hungarian government, Mrs. Katalin Novak. And I'll read a little bit from her bio. She is the Minister of State for Family, Youth, and International Affairs in the Ministry of Human Capacities. Now, that's terminology we don't use in our government, but maybe it's sort of comparable to our Department of Health and Human Services, maybe with education thrown in as well. She is responsible for families, women, elders, youth, and talent support. And she works to ensure that everybody from childhood until retirement years may experience a supporting environment to achieve their goals and fulfill dreams. Mrs. Novak has a master's degree in economics. She has previously worked in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs as well. And last but not least, she is also the mother of three children. Mrs. Novak, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much. Thank you for being able, taking the opportunity to join you.
I asked Mrs. Novak to join us because she was one of the principal organizers of the Budapest Family Summit that we recently attended, including the World Congress of Families. Now, I believe that this is the first time that the host country's government has actually acted as the sponsor for the World Congress of Families. Why did the Hungarian government believe that this event was important enough to help plan and organize it?
It is because for us, the family issue is of utmost importance. We think that we should really we should really put the values into the center of our governance. It's not only that we take measures, that we give financial support to families, but it's also the idea behind or the values behind. And we also thought that we should not only do it on a national level, but we should also come to the international level. And we were looking for partners. We actually had already organized a demographic forum 2 years ago. So we had the first Budapest Demographic Forum with the subtitle Families in the Focus. So that was already a demographic forum concentrating on the families and on family values. But it was also only a European-wide organized or event, I would say. So it was an Europe-wide event. But this time we thought that we would like to do something even bigger. So that was the reason why we thought that we could apply for the organization of the world or the co-organization of the or hosting of the World Congress of Families as well. So what we had this May in Budapest, it was the Budapest Family Summit, which was actually a four-day-long series of events and conferences, and one of the highlights was the World Congress of Families. So that was actually the reason, and when we met the organizers, and I personally met the organizers the first time, we already knew that we have many, many things in common, and we share the same thoughts on many issues, so that would be a great chance for both of us to bring World Congress of Families to Europe, to bring World Congress of Families to Budapest, and to actually join to the organizers by giving support and by being able to join these series of events of Budapest Family Summit.
Well, thank you so much for hosting it. And I know that Travis and I certainly enjoyed our time there. And as you mentioned, the first day of this Budapest Family Summit was devoted to the Budapest Demographic Forum, the second one that you have hosted. Now, for our audience in the United States, when we think about family issues, we maybe don't think about demographics, meaning population issues, as the first thing that comes to mind. But there does seem to be a greater awareness of this in other parts of the world. Can you please tell us about the demographic challenges, the population challenges that Hungary and the rest of Europe are facing, and why you are concerned about them?
Well, that's a very important and interesting question, because it is true that Europe is facing a little bit other kind of challenges than the United States. There are similarities in the meantime, but in Hungary we are also in quite a difficult situation regarding population decrease or demographic issues. That means that in Hungary, which is a country of 10 million people, we have a declining population. We actually have had this problem now for over 35 years. That means that since 1981, each and every year we lose a certain amount of our population. So that means that in like 3.5 decades, we have lost 10% of our population. There is a very, very bad demographic decline in Hungary. And that is also due to the fertility rate. I mean the poor fertility rate, which is now still below 1.5. It's 1.49. It was last year, but at the lowest, it was in 2011. It was 1.23. So that means that in an average family, the number of children were not even two. So that's very, very poor. That's not enough for maintaining our population. So the fact is that in Hungary, but also in Europe, there is a demographic decline. Well, if you look at Europe, in Europe, actually the population is still increasing, but it is only due to migrational issues. So it means that it's only the migrational flow which enables the European states to maintain their population. And that is not true for Hungary, because in Hungary we don't support demographic. We don't think that migration would be the solution for demographic challenges.
Let me jump ahead to that question, because I know that Prime Minister Orban, Viktor Orban, has sparked some controversy by, at one point at least, closing Hungary's southern border to migrants. It may call to mind for Americans a little the controversy generated by President Trump here in the U.S. when he proposed to build a wall on our southern border during his campaign. Now, again, to some people, immigration may seem like a separate issue from family issues, except that, as you just pointed out, some argue that immigration is the way to resolve the problem of declining population. Can you explain why your government does not agree with that view?
Well, this is actually a common solution, or that seems to be a solution for many European countries, that there is a lack of population, or there is a demographic, or that would be naturally, there is a natural demographic decline in the given country, so they don't have a fertility rate which would be enough to maintain their population. People don't have enough children in many, many European countries, and that maybe seems to be a good solution, that we, like, you know, let many, many migrants in the country, and that would, in theory, that would be able to give a solution to our demographic problems. That seems to be very simple, and we don't think that this would be the solution. And that is why we are, when we are talking about demographic issues, we are always talking about family issues in the meantime, because we think that we should actually think over what could be the reason behind European or Hungarian people not having even two children in average. What is the reason why they plan to have at least two children, and at the end they won't have even two? What is the reason why we don't have as many large families as before? Can we support the Hungarian young people to be able to have more children, to be able to raise their children? And can we help them, or can we assist them in overcoming these difficulties which they face when they want to have families? Or what are these difficulties, actually? That is the way we are thinking. And we think that migration is a completely other issue. And if we are talking about refugees, that's one thing. And of course, the humanitarian aspect should come first, and that we should help refugees, and we should help people in a bad social, economic, and security situation, even on the spot, so that they don't be forced to leave their country, or their original country. That is very important. But migrants, economic migrants, we don't want to let in our country. Mm. And that is because we want to count on our own inner resources, and we want to strengthen our inner resources. And we think that we should help and assist Hungarian young people to be able to have as many children as they want to have, and to be able to raise these children. And we think, and that would be our aim, and that would be our objective, which is, I know that it is quite ambitious, but actually our ambition, or our objective, is to bring up this fertility rate to 2 or over 2.
Sure.
And to help Hungarian people to be able to have large families if they want to have, and not to pretend as if migration were the solution to our demographic problems.
Right.
Secretary Novak, I just want to offer my own welcome, first of all, to you, and thank you for joining us from Hungary. I know Peter and I appreciated our time there. I, by the way, I actually have some friends from Hungary. I think it's a great place, and I've really enjoyed visiting there. Just a follow-up on some of these questions, and in terms of the family policies and family growth that you all are focusing on, can you just comment briefly on the support from the religious community, from the churches and the Christian groups in Hungary? What role have they played in terms of public support?
Our cooperation with the religious communities, it is very important, and we have a very, very strong civic life in Hungary as well in terms of family issues. So we have many pro-family civic organizations in Hungary, and of course the church institutions and the churches are very much in favor of family issues. So what we are doing is that we are trying to to help them in shaping legislation, of course, which is also pro-family legislation. I could even mention our constitution, where we very clearly say, for example, that life begins in the moment of conception, or that we protect marriage as a union of a man and a woman, and many issues in our laws, in our constitution and in other laws. And secondly, we also are assisting organizations, pro-family organizations as well, financially, so that they can even better manage their activities, which they all do, and on a very, very high level.
Yes, we're very envious of you, actually, that you have those protections for the life of the unborn children and protection for marriage as the union of a man and a woman in your constitution. That's something that we've tried to do in this country unsuccessfully. So I respect you for being able to accomplish that. Now, and I did want to respond to a couple of the things you said, just to clarify for our audience. The fertility rate, you were talking about the fertility rate, and usually people, the experts say that you need a fertility rate of 2.1, meaning that that the average woman gives birth to 2.1 children in her lifetime in order to have a stable population. If you have a fertility rate less than that, then you're going to have declining population. And some people say, well, what's the problem with that? Well, one of the problems, which I think is a problem here in the United States, is that if your younger generation is smaller, then you have fewer workers to support the sort of social service programs that you provide to the older people in the population. So there's a serious economic problem that can result. Now, Prime Minister Viktor Orban spoke at the summit as well. I think that may have been a first as well, and announced some new policies to encourage family formation. Can you tell us a little bit? I think the policy he mentioned policies involving student loans and mortgage loans. Just in about a minute, can you summarize what those policies were?
Yes. First of all, you should know that in Hungary we have many, many policies in support of families. So that means that the OECD average of family policies spent, I mean, the expenditure to family policies in percentage of GDP is 2.55. In Hungary, it's almost 5%. So that means that we have a lot of family policy issues which we support from the Hungarian budget. And there are some new steps, or there are some new measures from next year. That means that, for example, we will reduce student loans. So that means that students that have loans, will have the possibility to have their loans reduced when they have children. When they are ready to have children, their loans will be suspended, and then later on reduced. The total loan can be reduced at the birth of the third child. The other one is that we are reducing the mortgage debts in case of a child. When the third child is born, and from the third child, at the birth of each and every child, we are reducing the mortgage debt with an important sum. So it's
okay.
It's also a big help for those people who are having mortgages.
Well, thank you. Our time is just about up, but we really appreciate you joining us from Budapest, Hungary, Katalin Novak, with the Hungarian government. And thank you for joining us here on Washington Watch.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Well, folks, thank you for joining us again today. We are thankful for all of our guests who joined us today, those from Hungary and those in the studio. For more information, you could visit the website, tonyperkins.com. And from here on Washington Watch, we will see you next time. Thank you.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.